Hey, this is Janine with your Diamond Mentor Moment. We are starting February. I believe it's Chinese New Year's, another new month of the Hebrew calendar. It's February, lots of things going on. And today I'm talking about emotional granularity as we get into Valentine's Day as well. Looking at our emotions, looking at what it entails and how it affects our ability to create and our ability to connect with one another. You know, I talk about intercultural creativity, which is the combination between creative thinking and cultural competence. Creative thinking, creativity is not just about artistry, even though it is attached, but creative thinking is about divergent thinking, reframing, combinatory thinking, associations, unusual associations that not other people are seeing, metaphorical thinking, and imaginative thinking, all right? All of these cognitive processes are involved in creative thinking. And once again, it's the number one skill needed in the workforce per the World Economic Forum. So creativity is really important and a term that you and your organization should be aware of. When it comes to cultural competence, that's the intercultural part of creative thinking. So that is your ability to observe similarities and differences between different cultural groups, and you're observing with complexity and you're able to perspective shift and adapt your behavior in different cultural situations. Now, when I say culture, I don't just mean ethnic and national culture. I mean, a cultural group is a group of people with verified, you know, beliefs, values, and agreed upon attitudes. Basically, the theme song of culture is, this is how we do it, right? This is how we do it. This is the way things are done. That is culture. So how are these things connected with emotional granularity? And what is emotional granularity? So I play a quick game that I played with a workshop that I did. So we looked at the emotions of her face and the emotions that we think that we would make physically if we had this facial expression. And so we looked at just these different emotions. What would you say? I'll let you look at them if you want to put it in the chat if you're watching this live or replay. You can share. What would you call that emotion? A lot of people were naming emotions, but they were also naming what she would be saying, like captioning the image as well. What would that be? What would that look like? And that one. So we look at emotional granularity and look at what it means to be able to be specific with labeling your emotions. Dr. Lisa Feldman Barrett is a huge voice with this. And she even says that it's not really the physical aspect of a person's face. You know, she says that emotions are concepts that you produce internally, depending upon your sensory observation, right? Your sensations, your previous experiences, your cultural information, right? And your social interactions. And so you and I can look at a stimulus or someone's face and have completely different just responses to it. Or we can look at her face and have completely different responses to it because of our background information and the previous experiences that we're bringing to that stimulus. So emotional granularity is our ability to be very specific with the emotions that we're feeling. Saying that we're like, I feel bad, or I feel like, is different than saying, you know, I feel really upset because this happened, or I feel really disappointed, or just you have more vocabulary to describe what you're feeling. Why that's important is because if you can describe what you're feeling with specificity and acuity, you're able to map out an action plan better than just saying you feel, you don't know really what to do with that. But if I'm frustrated, like I work with my son, which I will show you, let me not go too far ahead. If I'm frustrated, I know how to work that out because I know what I do when I feel frustrated. I have an action plan. Those of you who have been following my work, you know that I'm really big on the neuroscience. Your emotion maker is your brain. It's a conceptual process that you are doing. You're conceptualizing and building these emotions internally. So when you know what's going on in your brain, you have more tools to affect your life. To know your brain is to know your mind, even though your mind is different than your brain. It's a lot more things going on there. But to know your brain is to know your mind and is to know your life.
So let's say you're feeling bad, you're feeling unpleasant. What do you do about that? I mean, I don't know. There could be lots of things you could do because you don't actually know what the cause is. if you're feeling really pleasant in the moment, you don't know what the causes are. So you don't know what to make sure to repeat again. And so what your brain is doing when it's making a guess about the causes, it's using past experience. And the more granular that that experience is organized, that is, the more precise you can be, the better your guesses are. So some people have learned to make sense of their mood, their affect, as emotions like anger, sadness, fear, disgust. And for some people, irritation, frustration, rage are all synonyms of anger. For some people, though, those are really distinct experiences with very distinct behavior, like action plans that go with them, that you do different things when you're angry versus when you're enraged versus when you're irritated. And the more precise you can be in giving meaning, guessing at the causes of the sense data, the more precisely your brain will tailor its action plan to the situation. And so that's why making sense of the present moment as anger is more precise than I feel like crap, which doesn't tell you anything about what to do. Or you may guess the wrong thing. So anger, sadness, fear, these words actually refer to bodies of knowledge or episodes of knowledge that you have from your past. And the more precisely you can organize them, the better off you'll be in terms of tailoring your actions. The more precision you can get, the better off you are. And that's really what granularity is about. And ironically, if you become granular, even about negative, unpleasant emotions, you still get benefit. When I observed these differences in people 30 years ago, it never occurred to me, really ever, that this ability to be granular would in any way translate into physical health, the tendency to get sick. I never thought it would reduce your tendency to get sick. It would speed your recovery if you do. I mean, I was just really floored. And the reason why is because basically you can think of words and concepts as tools for regulating the body. I mean, we don't think of it that way, but that's really what they are. The more tools you have, the better off you'll be.
And so that was Dr. Lisa Feldman. She has two great books, How Emotions Are Made. And then I got this one in the mail yesterday, the 7.5 lessons about the brain. So I'm so excited to teach you through her work. She's doing amazing work. I would love to get her on my podcast. Name It to Tame It. Dr. Daniel Siegel talks about this as well. Name It to Tame It. How is your ability to physically or to acutely name your emotions? Dr. Daniel Siegel says, if you're able to name it, you're able to tame it. You're able to address it. You're able to calm it down. You're able to communicate it better with other people. And that's how it affects our creativity. If you can't communicate what's going on, it really stops advanced progression. Like, can I communicate how I'm feeling that my son is not taking his nap right now? Do you see what he's doing? He's like doing break dancing in his bed, and he should be sleeping. So let me communicate that feeling to you. So I have an emotion about that, but he's probably just restless. So anyway, this is a picture of him as a two-year-old, and we were working on emotional granularity as early as 1 and 2, because children, they do get frustrated if they can't communicate what they're feeling internally. And so we say, okay, if you're feeling frustrated, what do? We stop. We breathe and we look at things from multiple perspectives. So we work on perspective shifting, or we go seek additional help. You know, we work on looking for information from other sources. And so he first has to observe and label the emotion he's feeling so he knows which action to take. You're going to take a different action to feeling disappointed, anger, calmness, ecstasy, you know, excitement. So there's things to be aware of with that. So we work on emotional granularity from the get-go. Children, infants are learning about the emotional climate of you, of the environment, of different situations the first day they get here. So keep that in mind. This is a story that I love to share about not just naming your emotions, but also having the power to reframe. This is Janis Joplin and Bruce Springsteen, and they were featured in the same magazine at the same time, a magazine called Rolling Stone, a few decades ago when they were at the top of their game. And they interviewed Janis Joplin, and they said, you know, it seems like you just you do your live shows, but you have a lot of stage fright. You know, it really, you look upset sometimes before you go on. She just has a lot of a big physical reaction before she goes on stage, to the point where she's almost like vomiting. She's just so nervous. And they asked her why. And she said, well, because no one knows what's going to happen. You don't know what's going to happen. And it just gets to me. And in the same magazine, they spoke to Bruce Springsteen, and they said, you know, your live shows are so pumped up. You're like, whoa. And you're just, the energy is just there. Like, what do you do to get prepared for your live shows? And he said, well, I'm just so on top of it because you never know what's going to happen. And so the point why I love this story, it was shared to me several years ago in passing, but I loved it because they were both in the same event, having the same experience, the same physical reactions, right? Heart palpitations, maybe sweaty palms and dilated pupils, but they had different labels of emotion. She labeled it very nervous and nerve-wracking, but he labeled it excitement and thrilling. And so not only is it important to know how to label the internal emotions that we are having, it's important to be aware of the labels that you're actually using it. I use this, and this is a tool that I use when I'm going out there on stage to speak. I can say, oh my gosh, I'm so scared, or, well, you know, what if I mess up, or da 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 da. Or I can say, I'm so excited to share this powerful information with this audience. I know someone out there needs this hope, needs this new idea about intercultural creativity. So I shift my perspective and I relabel the emotions I can feel inside of me. My heart beats before I go on stage. You know, I can feel that I'm getting into a sympathetic nervous system reaction, like a fight or flight. But then I label it, I reframe it, and that's how I calm down. And once I'm out on stage, I get into my zone and I connect with the audience and I go. And so that helps. So emotional granularity. So I did an activity with the workshop this morning, and I had them choose one of the emotions that they have felt in the past, and said, how would you label that emotion? And what are your actions associated with that emotion? Have you ever thought about that? Okay, what action do I associate with when I get angry? What actions do I associate it when I'm just in a grateful, thankful mood? What actions do I associate when I'm frustrated, right? That's not just for 2-year-olds. That's for 22-year-olds and 32-year-olds. I know some 42-year-olds who don't do well with frustration or ambiguity, or if, you know, their ego gets shot out a little bit. You know, what do I do in those situations? So really pre-thinking that, because since we're in a VUCA environment, volatile, uncertain, complex, ambiguous, we have to kind of be pre-prepared because we don't know what situation we're going to be in next, okay? All right, so you can look online. There's things like this, the wheel of emotion that has, you know, some main emotions people know, the main vocabulary people know, like mad, scared, joyful, powerful, peaceful, or sad. But if you see the element of mad, it can go into more of a granular labeling of hurt, hostile, angry, selfish, hateful, critical. And it can go even more into granularity and be more specific. So go check out the Wheel of Emotion. I'll have some links in the podcast. And Dr. Robert Polchick did the Wheel of Emotion, but in the shape of a flower. And I thought that was really cool, very creative. And he talked about how emotions are maybe, you know, grow out like the petals of a flower. So this Diamond Mentor moment is just to remind you that don't let your emotions derail you. You know, you can be, emotions are great. Emotions are very powerful, and emotions give us information about the world. We need emotions as tools to figure out, you know, just how we're doing, how other people are doing, but they should be in the passenger seat. You are in the driver's seat. Don't let them grab the wheel, and know how to calm them down if they try to do. Use your emotions as a communicative tool, a tool to grow, a tool to create, a tool to acquire more sensory information from your surroundings internally, and the emotions from with other. In a future podcast or a future video, I'll talk about social contagion and how your emotions jump from one person or from one group to another. Few tips before I leave: breathing, so important. It gets you from your sympathetic nervous system to your parasympathetic nervous system. It calms you down. It helps regulate your heartbeat. You know, your pupils get to where they need to be. And it gets you back into being intentional about what decision you're going to make next. And you're not just operating out of rage or whatever intense emotion it is. Aromatherapy. So I have these things that I use. You know, I allow my son to smell a little bit lavender as he's calming down. Apparently, he's still going crazy in his nap. So it didn't work today. But, you know, it is what it is. So lavender and then peppermint. I use peppermint before I go on, you know, on stage or before I do a video just to heighten my senses. Aroma, right? Fragrance, scents. Is the only sense that goes straight to your brain. So your olfactory system, there's a direct connection. So when you smell the aroma, it goes straight to your brain. There's no other gates that it has to pass through. So that's something to be aware of. Your power of smell is powerful. So use it. And then there'll be some additional resources that I will attach in the podcast of this one. So as we end, don't forget, intercultural creativity is for us all. It is the end result of where we're all trying to get to. No matter if you're in DEI work, you're doing, you know, psychology work, whatever type of work you're doing, intercultural creativity is our end point because we want people to be creative no matter where life puts them, which organization they're in, which entrepreneurial pursuit they're in. We want people to be creative. And in order to do that, we need to know how our emotions work, how they're constructed in the brain, and how to keep them in control so we can use them to support ourselves and our colleagues and team members and family members. Antonio Damasio said, "We're not thinking machines that feel, we're feeling machines that think." And I would even change the word machines to beings, right? We are feeling machines that think. Emotion is first, and then the content, the academics, whatever knowledge you need them to know, but understand emotion comes first. Our books are out, The 7 Gems of Intercultural Creativity. You can find them on cafestrategies.com or JeaneLetford.com. And my little one wrote the book, I Am Creative, with me, and he is being creative like he is right now in his bed. He is being creative. And he is showing you what creativity looks like from the eyes of a three-year-old. And then I, at the back of the book, explain to you what that looks like, how not to squash it by accident, and how to redevelop it in yourselves as well. So I hope that you enjoyed that. And I am excited to keep bringing you information that you can employ and insert into your life, your profession, and your communities at large. This is your Diamond Mentor Moment for today, and I will see you next time. Bye-bye. Creative thinking is now the number one skill needed in our workforce. This is a VUCA environment. So increasing the creative thinking skills on your team is no longer a luxury, it's now required. But creativity can't thrive unless there's a culture of inclusion, belonging, and psychological safety. Employees must feel empowered to engage and collaborate across diverse groups within their workplace ecology. That's why Cafe Strategies has developed a results-driven, human-centered, one-of-a-kind training called Intercultural Creativity. This interactive training combines intercultural development, which is a key tool needed for inclusion, with a methodology that cultivates and expands creative thinking. Our specialized live and virtual DEI trainings increase perspective agility, cultural competence, imaginative thinking, powerful questioning, curiosity, creative confidence, and the development of a robust creative growth mindset. These are not the skills of tomorrow. These are the skills of today. We can help your organization unleash the creative potential that allows inclusion to result in innovation. Contact Cafe Strategies today to bring your team into the future of this global workforce.